Thanks for checking out the Jacob's Well podcast. My name is Roxanne, and this week we are in week four of our legacy series from the book of Ecclesiastes. I'm excited about today's message, which is all about learning how to live on purpose for God's purpose in our time and seasons. Have you ever tried to stretch time? That is to say, to try to get more time out of the time that you've been given. The other day, I was in the grocery store, and I ran into a mom, and she only had a few items in her cart, and she had told me that she had been shopping for about an hour, and I said to her, well, are you not finding what you need? And she said, no, my husband is at home with the kids, and I'm stretching my time. I think that kids are really good at trying to stretch time when you hear them. Just a few more minutes. Can I just stay a little bit longer? Please, just a little bit more time. Or I think many of us try to stretch our time in bed when we hit the snooze over and over and over again. When I talk to students, they'll be given like a week or 2 weeks to study for an exam or to prepare for a project, and somehow they try to stretch all of that time into about 2 hours the night before it's due, usually at midnight. The last time I tried to stretch my time, I karate chopped a sheriff. I literally karate chopped a sheriff. I was trying to make to put more into my day than I really had time to do, and I ended up working here really late at night, and I was with Erica at the time, and we had to go out back. It was before this addition was on, so we were walking out back, and then we had to walk around the church, and we had to come to the front of the parking lot to get to our vehicles, and as we were walking out back and coming around the corner, I was met by this very large man with a black stocking cap dressed in all black, and I did what any good friend would do. I literally threw Erica into the wall, and I do not know to this day how or why this would come out of me, but I literally did the whole karate thing. And she said that my leg went higher than my head, which I couldn't do right now, by the way, because I wouldn't be able to stand up here. But at the time, the sheriff just looked at me with the most stoic, serious look, and all he could say to me was, "Ma'am, I don't think you're going to hurt me." I've been thinking a lot about stretching my time. I had a birthday a few weeks ago, and I stopped celebrating and counting my birthdays, and several years ago, I started counting the time that I had left. Now, maybe you've never did that, but once I was about 45, I started thinking about, wow, I mean, statistically, my life is like well over halfway. And I started to think, wow, I have a limited amount of time. I have a limited amount of time. I need to make that time matter. I need to make sure that I'm taking every opportunity to live on purpose for God's purpose. And it was then that I began praying along with a prayer that I found in Psalms 90, verse 12, which was written to God as a prayer by Moses. Moses actually wrote a psalm, in case you didn't know that. So I just want to read just a portion of that for you. It says, "Teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom." Teach us, instruct us, show us, remind us to number our days. Because we all know that our days are numbered, right? So that we may gain a heart of wisdom. He was crying out to God to say, "Let my life matter. Help me to take every opportunity that you give to me and make it purposeful, God." And so I love this. This has helped me to understand my time is limited, but I can make things matter in that limited time. I love Family Dedication Weekend because, you know, as a church, it's our opportunity to take a vow and to make a promise with all of our parents that we're going to come alongside of them to help them to raise their children to know and become like Jesus. One of my favorite things that we do at the dedication class before they're dedicated is we give them an illustration about losing your marbles. Now, they probably already feel that way as it is, but this is legit, an illustration. So we show them a jar like this, and this jar has 936 marbles in it. And what the 936 marbles represent is the 936 weeks that they have with their child from the time that their child is born until the time that their child graduates. And so we give them this idea that every week after the week is over, that they should take a marble out of their jar and set it aside. Then there's another week, take another marble out. Another week goes by, take another marble out. And when you have a jar this full of marbles, it doesn't seem that significant. But imagine this. Your child is 9. Half of your marbles are now gone, and you have 468 weeks before they graduate. And then you think of another milestone. You think of the milestone of turning 16. And so you've removed quite a few weeks of marbles. And you're now down to 156 weeks until your child graduates. And then I'm just going to show you one more thing. After that milestone, you have 1-2 marbles left, which represent the 2 summers you have left with your child until they graduate. Now, some of you, I'm looking at you and I'm seeing that you're, we don't give you this illustration to take your breath away or to make you anxious or to make you feel bad. We actually give this example, this illustration to you because we believe that if you see how much time you have with your child, you will make every one of those weeks matter. Teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. So we've been in the Legacy series. This is the 4th week in, and we've been reading together the book of Ecclesiastes. And what I really love about this is as I'm reviewing the last few weeks of lessons, I really realize that they all kind of gear towards what our message is today, which is about time and seasons. And I want to review to you just in short what we've been going through for the last 3 weeks as far as our messages. But I also want you to know that each message kind of poses a question about our time. And so I'm going to just run that with you right now. Let's do that. A little review. So the first week, Pastor Paul introduced us to Hevel, which Hevel is like smoke. Now, Hevel is like those things that go on in your life that you just can't figure out, you can't grasp, you can't get a hold of. What in the world is going on? And since we've introduced you to that word Hevel, I hear a lot about Hevel around here. Like, everything's Hevel. It's Hevel all over the place. But isn't that the truth? I mean, it is really hard when you're going through things in life to try to make meaning out of it. And so I pose this question about time to you. Can we trust God with our time even when it doesn't make sense? Even when we're in the Hevel? And so next, Shua unpacked a message about under the sun. And what we learned that under the sun means is simply the time that you have from the time that you're born until the time that you die. And what does that dash in between look like? And so he was talking to us, and the preacher was talking to us about how we try to chase meaning. And it's like chasing the wind. I mean, it doesn't last. Whatever we're chasing, whatever stuff we think can fill our life doesn't last. And so I pose this question to you about time. How can we use our time to chase what matters for eternity? So the next week, Paul unpacked a message about eternity in our hearts. And I just want to stop with the scripture verse that he shared with us right at the beginning of his message last week. It said, God has made all things beautiful in his time. And we learned last week that beautiful actually means like a perfect fit, like a perfect plan, a purposeful plan. And when you think of the statement that the preacher makes, it is powerful when you think of it, understanding what the word beautiful means. God has made all things in a perfect plan, a perfect fit in your life, in his time. And so I want to read to you today the verses from Ecclesiastes that we're going to cover. And I have to tell you that they are by far the most popular verses, the most well-known verses in the book of Ecclesiastes. And why do I know this? Because they actually made it to the number one Billboard chart. All right? In 1965, I bet you some of you remember the song Turn, 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 all right? The Seasons. Now, it kind of ages us a little bit, doesn't it? But how many of you guys remember the Turn, Turn, Turn song? Uh-huh. See, that does age you all right now, all right? So in these verses, the preacher makes seven contrasting statements. Seven of them are positive, and seven of them are negative. Kind of our seasons, right? Now, the first week, Pastor Paul sang to you, which was wonderful. And then Shua sang to you, which was grand. I will not sing to you these verses because this whole room will be filled with hebel. Hebel like you have never known before. I just simply want to read them to you. And as I read them, you can pay attention to those contrasts in those statements. There's a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to uproot. How many of you guys are singing right now? Like in your head, you're like singing the song, right? Yeah, well, that would be hevel, so let's not do that. All right? A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to tear down and a time to build. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. This is kind of some of our hevel right now. This is some of our seasons right now. A time to scatter stones and a time to gather them. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to search and a time to give up. A time to keep and a time to throw away. A time to tear and a time to mend. A time to be silent and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace. Seasons. We all have seasons. Can't escape seasons. Seasons happen. You all feel the season of cold right now, right? I just want us to understand that God appoints these seasons in our lives. And you can't escape seasons. I mean, you're going to have seasons in your parenting. You're going to have seasons in your marriage or any other relationships. You're going to have seasons in your jobs. You're going to have seasons in school. You're going to have seasons in church. And I bet we all have seasons in our spiritual life. Sometimes we're going to feel like we're in the top of a mountain, and sometimes we're going to feel like we're in the lowest of valleys. Sometimes we are going to have great successes to celebrate, and sometimes we're going to fail. Sometimes we're going to have wins, and sometimes we're going to have losses. Sometimes things are going to be easy for us. Sometimes. Oftentimes things can be difficult for us. Sometimes we will have laughter and dancing, and sometimes we'll have tears and mourning. I was talking to a good friend of mine on the phone the other night, and she's going through a really hard time, and she was telling me about her season. And she told me that her season was like a roller coaster. And I said, amen, sister. Roller coasters are nothing but hevel. All right? And I just want to share with you how I can compare a roller coaster ride with the seasons of our life. And we talked about this in our conversation together. Well, first of all, I've only been on a roller coaster 3 times in my life. And every time I've been on a roller coaster, I have held on for dear life. I mean, you know, I'm on there and you're just gripping, right? And when you're in a season, sometimes you're just holding on for dear life. And for those people here today that are the people that are on the roller coaster with your hands up in the air like this, I am absolutely convinced you're just, Jesus, Jesus, save me now, save me. That's how we feel on our roller coasters of seasons. Sometimes we're just counting the minutes down until it will all be over. And I have to tell you that every roller coaster ride I have ever been tricked to be on, I have literally counted the minutes and the seconds until the ride starts, until it's over. And the last roller coaster ride I was on was exactly 1 minute and 37 seconds. All right? And so I count, okay, 30, 31, 32, 33. And sometimes we feel like that. God, can I just, is it going to be done? I'm just counting that time until it's done. And the biggest statement that she made when I was talking to her was just, it's just this ups and downs. I mean, that's how when we think of seasons and roller coasters, right? We think of the ups and downs. And then she made a statement that said, and just when you think, whew, spinning around a corner, takes your breath away. Isn't that the truth? Not just about roller coasters, about life and seasons. It just, sometimes it's so difficult that it can just take your breath away. Well, the difference between a roller coaster ride and a season is that we can choose to get on the roller coaster ride, and we can choose to get off the roller coaster ride, but we can't escape the seasons. I have to say that once in a while, once in a very, very great while, God will give you a reason to laugh when you look back at the roller coaster ride or the season. And the last time I was on a roller coaster, which, yes, my sweet children tricked me to get on. We were off the roller coaster ride, and I was yet to be able to speak because I was shaking. I was trembling, and I hadn't made any facial expressions. I was just as stoic as that sheriff, you know. And my kids, I could see them out of my view, and they were just like trying everything not to laugh at me. You know what I mean? And all of a sudden, I heard this sweetest voice behind me. It was a little boy with Down syndrome. And he said, Mama, look at what that roller coaster ride did to that woman's hair. I got hevel hair, people. So now you look at me and you say, she got hevel hair. All right? Aren't you glad, though, that in our seasons and in our roller coaster rides that we can look back at the scripture in Ecclesiastes 3:11? God makes all things beautiful in his time. He fits it together. He's got a perfect plan in his time. So since I knew that I was going to be talking about time and seasons, I started listening. So I started listening to what everybody was saying about their time. And there was a common thing that was said over and over and over again. And it was this: I wish I had more time. Oh, I just wish I had more time. Oh, if I just had more time, I just wish I had more time. And so I thought to myself, what should we talk about? Well, what should we choose to do with our time, I thought was the perfect way to start. And the first thing that I want to share with you is choose what is better. Choose what is better. So when I asked people when they were telling me, well, I just don't have enough time, I don't have enough time, I said, well, what would you do if you had more time? What kind of things would you do if you actually had more time? These are the answers. These are very consistent answers. And I'm sure at some time, these are things that maybe you have thought about. I would spend more time with my kids and my family. I would visit my parents more. I would read my Bible. I would spend quiet time with God. I'd read a book. I'd craft, cook, or garden. That is not me, that's all I'm saying. I don't need to make time for that. Fish. I would fish. I would call a friend and have coffee with them. I would be consistent about date nights. I would laugh more. Do you know that people statistically laugh more every day than ever before in our history? I would visit a relative, but this is my favorite. So like a few days ago, I was talking to a friend of mine who is a counselor, and she's got the influenza and she's super sick, and she said, "Roxanne, seriously though, I just don't have time to be sick." So I added that. We need more time to be sick. It used to be when you'd ask the question, "How you doing?" people would say, "I'm fine. Oh, I'm fine. I'm fine." It's just not what I hear anymore. What I hear from people is, "I'm busy. How you doing?" "Oh man, I'm busy. How you doing?" "Oh, it's just been so busy lately." Busy, busy, busy. I have to say that doing, 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 and busy, busy, busy does not equal meaning. The best moms don't do more. They choose what matters most. They choose better. The best teachers don't do more. They invest their energy in what matters most. They choose better. The most effective followers of Jesus don't do more. They do more of what brings glory to God. They choose better. I want to tell you what Jesus says about choosing better in a story that is told in our Bible in Luke chapter 10. And it's a familiar story, and I'm sure that once I start talking about it, many of you will know what it's about. I'm not going to read the whole story today. I really encourage you to read it for yourself. But it's about two sisters. It's about Mary and it's about Martha. And they're preparing because they got a very special dinner guest coming to town, all right? And talks about how Martha responds to it and then how Mary responds to it. And I think before I read any more, I just have to say to you that I think a lot of times in the story, Martha gets kind of a bad rap, all right? Because Martha is the one that's just busy, 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 doing all the work. I mean, she's psyched up, she's excited, she's frantic. Jesus is coming to dinner, and she's got to get all those preparations, make everything perfect. And I have to tell you, I think we've probably all been there, right? Trying to prepare for something, trying to ready ourselves for something, and we just kind of get frantic. My kids always knew when we were going to be having company, and this is what they would say: "Mama's on the crazy train again. Obviously, we're going to have company." All right? And so I can relate with Martha. I can relate with Martha. But Jesus makes a really important point about our busy in these scriptures. So let's just read this together. It says, "She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said." Mary sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. Let's just stop there for a minute and imagine sitting at the Lord's feet. I think of peace. I just think of quiet. Just think of pause. And then here comes Martha, right? It says, "But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be done." She was in a frenzy. She was frantic. She was running around, trying to get everything done, trying to make the best of it. She was busy, 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 doing, doing, doing. And so when I think of our families, I think of all the things that you tell me that you're frantic, that you're distracted by, that you're doing and doing and doing. Here are some of the things that I hear continuously. "We're just busy. Games, practice, work, tournaments, diapers, diapers, and more diapers." I put that in there for all of you. Okay? All right. "Homework, AP classes, running here, running there, concerts, recitals, housework, lawn work, taking care of everything, taking care of everyone. We have distractions too, don't we? We have distractions. And so let's go on to the next part. Now, to set this up, Martha's about had it with Mary. She's been at the feet of Jesus now, and Martha's running around on the crazy train, frantically trying to get all these preparations, doing, busy, busy, busy. And so Martha comes to Jesus, and she's like, "Are you kidding me, Jesus? Talk to Mary." She is just like, "I'm running around doing all these things, trying to get this all done," and she's just sitting there. She's not helping me at all. And I can just imagine and picture Jesus, right? Calm. Just calm, but convicting. "Martha, Martha, you are worried and upset about many things. You are worried and upset about many things." I think this verse right here could be a life verse for most of us, all right? We are worried and upset about many things. She was worried and upset about many things. And then Jesus says to Martha, "But few things are needed, or indeed only one. And Mary has chosen what is better." Mary has chosen what is better. Now listen, I don't think it's that Mary didn't have distractions. I think Mary was probably just like us. She had a lot of things on her mind, a lot of busy, a lot of distractions. Nor do I think that she didn't have any worries or she didn't have any reason to be upset. But could it be that when she sat at the feet of Jesus listening, could it be that she laid down those worries and those distractions, and those things that upset her? Mary chose what is better. I have a question I want to ask you, and just to make you kind of marinate this a little bit and think about this just a little bit. And this is the question I have for you today. What is the better choice that you have been distracted from pursuing? What is the better choice that you've been distracted from pursuing? I think about that, and right away when I see all of you, I think of believers, I think of Christ followers, and I think maybe what you're thinking about or what comes to your mind right away is spending time with Jesus, intimacy with God, not having time to align our hearts with God's heart. Some of you are maybe thinking, "I've been doing so much for my kids, so much doing, running, that I really haven't had time to enjoy them." Some of you have been so busy doing that that you have been doing child-centered parenting, and your marriage has just been set aside. Maybe some of you today are thinking, "I've been filling my day with video games, isolating myself from relationships and things that really matter." Or maybe you're going to join the statistics, the real statistic that over 7 hours a day you're on social media or on your phone and you're not even seeing the person that is right in front of you. When you choose better, when you sit at the feet of Jesus listening, you align your heart with God's heart. You align your heart with God's priorities. When you choose better and when you sit at the feet of Jesus listening, God's Spirit becomes evident in your life. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. What kind of boss would you be? What kind of mom or dad would you be if you sat at the feet of Jesus listening? What kind of student, what kind of employee would you be if you sat at the feet of Jesus listening? When you choose better, when you sit at the feet of Jesus listening, You become a steward of your life, not an owner of your life. Your talents, your time, your finances are given over to God. Few things are needed. Few things are needed, or indeed, only one. Mary has chosen what is better. There's one more thing that I want to put on your radar besides choosing what is better when we think about what to do with our time, and that is choose now to make it better later. Choose now to make it better later. And in the legacy series, there has been a definition used to describe what legacy is, and I love it. I think it just is really what I want to share with you today about this choosing how to make it better. And so this is what the definition is: taking what has been entrusted to us and making it better for those who follow. Taking what's been entrusted to us and making it better for those who are following us. When I say follow us, I mean like long after we're gone. I mean like when we're already gone. And so I think that the things that we do now, the way that we live now, the choices that we make now, they're going to have an impact on those who follow us, right? They are. And this is true in almost every area of our lives. In our home, it's true in our workplace, it's true in our schools or in our businesses, it's certainly true in our finances. We can make all of these things better now for those who follow us, but listen, more than anything else, we are entrusted with our faith. We are entrusted with our faith and the faith of those who follow us. We are entrusted with our faith and with the faith of those who follow us. In Psalm 78, there's just some really good verses about understanding what it is to be entrusted with our faith. Now, Psalms is 72 verses long, and I'm not going to read that much to you today. But the reason why it's so long is because it's a story of God's people up until the time of King David. But there's a portion of this that I think is really valuable, really important for you to hear. So it says this: "We will tell the next generation the praiseworthy deeds of the Lord, his power and the wonders he has done, which he commands our ancestors. He commands our ancestors to teach their children. So the next generation would know them, even the children yet to be born. And they, in turn, would tell their children. Then they would put their trust in God and would not forget his deeds, but would keep his commandment." We have a beautiful family in our church. It's the Anderson family, and they are living out a legacy. They're entrusted with the faith of their children, and together they are building a legacy. And I want you just to listen to this, watch this video with me.
I'm Kyle, and this is my wife, Stephanie Anderson, and these are our daughters, Piper and Hadley and Brindle. And we've been coming to Jacob's Well almost 17 years now. The cool thing that we've been able to do, and we've been able to find opportunities for the whole family to serve. So I think lunch with pastors, to communion, and just seeing these ladies and the excitement and joy they have in actually doing it. It's not like a chore or a job. It's something that they actually really look forward to. And I think it's something that, as a family, having that, something that you can do at church to serve together has been really, really cool. That word steward oftentimes is thrown about in lots of different ways. You can be a good steward of your time. You can be a good steward of the land and different things. But, as far as what, we've learned here at church, as far as, I think the word steward has to do with you're here to care for something. God has blessed you with something that it's your job to manage and care for. We see that with being stewards of our children, and teaching them and helping to raise them up to know and love Jesus.
Yeah, I think for our kids coming here and tithing, it's fun because it's with all the excitement down on that end. At home, it's been fun and easy for us to lay it out as far as an allowance goes, what part you can use to spend, which part you can use to save, and then which part goes to God. And, you know, it's in quarters and in dollars right now, but it's an easy example and so fun for them when they bring it there. I know they're picturing the things that might buy for the store down there or different things that Miss Roxanne will use with all those kids. And so it's just a beautiful thing.
I think Jacob's well is just an amazing investment in our time and resources, just because we see so much come back in the time that we give, you know, in serving, comes back so much in the joy I know that we feel, that our kids see and feel. That's something that I think it fills them up, it fills us up. And the time that we're just here together as a family in church is just something that it's amazing. You know, when your kids don't want to miss church, that's a really cool thing. I think living a life of stewardship really just boils down to every aspect of your life is something that you're managing for God. To be a steward is a manager, a caregiver, a caretaker. And there's so many aspects of our life that falls into, from your family, to your finances, to your body. You're managing these things for God. And so to live a life of stewardship, it basically just trickles into every aspect of your life. The word legacy, it's a big word because there's so many aspects of it that it can cover. But what we do now has an impact generations from now. And now being able to pass that on to our kids, that legacy of following Jesus, and that's something that hopefully, you know, generations to come, their kids and their grandkids will be able to pass that legacy of faith on. It's our job now to kind of be a role model for that for our kids, so that way they hopefully can continue that legacy in their lives even when we're not here anymore.
Their oldest daughter, Hadley, has been part of our Rush program. And you can see her here. Yes, this is from Family Weekend, so now you know what's going down. This is Hadley, and she's in the middle. She is helping lead worship. And so she joined the Rush leadership team about a year ago. And one of the first things that we do with our Rush students, we ask them the question about legacy. And we ask them, what do you want to be known for? What do you want to be remembered for in the time that you have to serve God under the sun? And this is what Hadley writes. When I am gone, I want people to say that I loved God with all of my heart and that I was kind to everyone, and also that I made everyone feel Jesus' love. Hadley has a heart of legacy. Along with her family, we as a church have been entrusted with Hadley's faith story and the faith story of her children and the faith story of her children's children. I'm sure you've heard Pastor Paul talk about we're coming close to our 20-year anniversary. And statistically, the first 20 years of a church are supposed to be the best years, the most meaningful years. Everything that happens that's good in a church life usually happens in the first 20 years. But we're entrusted. We're entrusted to make it better 20 years from now and 20 years after that. There's no other initiative that has been more meaningful to me personally than the initiative of legacy. And it's really because of my granddaughter, Eliana. Here's a picture of Eliana. She is a little sassy, all right? This is her first day of first grade. And the reason why I chose this picture is because of the framed picture up here in the corner. It says, "I am a child of God." And if you know Eliana, you're going to know that she lets everybody know that she is a child of God, that she loves Jesus, and she wants to make sure you love Jesus too. And so oftentimes she comes to church with me when I'm working, and one day she was sitting just hanging out with Erica and some of the other leaders, and it was time to go, so I came to get her, and I said, Eliana, it's time to go, and she was going to try to stretch time. And so she's like, no, Nana, can I just stay here for a little bit longer? I just want to stay here for a little bit longer. And I said, no, honey, we need to go. And she said, Nana, you just don't understand. I just love church, but it's not that I just love church. It's that church is like a home to me. As a Nana, I'm aware that I don't have unlimited time. That my marbles are definitely getting low. That I need to choose better now so I can make every week that I have with her matter. I'm aware that even though I will not be around to share my faith with her children's children, I can share my faith with her now. I know that the choices I make now can make things better for her and for generations to come. Part of the way my husband and I will do that is by participating in Legacy. We've already filled out our commitment card. Our prayer when doing this is this. Long after we're gone, Jacob's Well will continue to be a place that she and her children and their children will thrive in their faith. That it will be a place where someone will come alongside of her in her seasons of hevel and roller coaster rides. A place that no matter what is going on in her life, in her marriage, or in the life of her students or her grandkids, that they will find care and steps to know and become like Jesus. It's our prayer that when she and her family walk through the door, that they feel like it's more than a church, but it's a place for them to call home. What can we do with our time? We can choose what is better, or we can choose now to make it better later. I have some next steps for you. The first step that I want to share is the prayer that Moses taught me to pray. Teach me to number my days that I may gain a heart of wisdom and choose what matters. What is better. I want you guys to be encouraged to maybe think about praying that prayer along with me, even if it's through the end of our Legacy series. But that prayer is so meaningful when you pray it every day. It helps you to just seize the day and take opportunities that matter in the day. Also, another next step would be for you to engage in Legacy, but in a way that you sit down at the feet of Jesus, listening to what he says and asking him, how can I be a steward of my time, in my talents, in my money? And lastly, I want to encourage you to continue in our study. The book of Ecclesiastes has been such a great book for me personally and the wisdom that I've gained, and I know that God is not done with it yet, all right? So I just encourage you to finish in your study. And as always, if you're here today and you're on a roller coaster or you're in a season, I just would encourage you to stop in to the prayer room. There are people there that are going to care for you and listen and pray for you.